Live from the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go. 5 o'clock hour. Show today in part is brought to you by Battleborn Injury Lawyers. We'll have Justin Watkins on tomorrow for a special Wednesday appearance. He's usually on with us on Mondays. A lot to get into. They've got offices all over the state of Nevada. 766-1400 is the number at Battleborn Injury Lawyers, with offices in downtown Vegas, Las Vegas, and in Henderson. We have some media stuff to get into, and maybe I'll get smacked around here. Let's bring in Miles Simmons on the NFL as well. Miles, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Look at this. All right. I am good. I'll just say I really enjoyed the women's basketball last night, and I'm looking forward to the women's Final Four as much as the men's. It hasn't passed the men's, but
Miles can answer your questions about Cleveland if it's a good host.
I will have some Cleveland questions in a second, but I want to lean on both of you guys, because I think anytime a media entity makes an employee apologize, and in this case for a column like the LA Times did with Ben Bulch, I think that hurts the cause of journalism. I also don't think it's going to help coverage of women's sports. I read the story. I didn't really have a problem with it, but I also have a certain position on Kim Mulkey and the bullies that LSU are. Did you read it? And what did you think of the story and the discipline?
I thought that the apology was appropriate. I mean, I thought that the language used in it was archaic, if you will, you know, and
was it sexist or racist? Neither, or both.
I thought it was a little bit of both. Okay. You know, I didn't like it. I thought it was unbecoming of the LA Times, frankly, which is a entity that I subscribe to. And, you know, I didn't like that. I let them know. I did send in some email. But, like, you know, I think at the same time, it's like, I see your point where it's like, okay, are we really limiting people for a good reason? You know, like, if you feel that way, then you feel that way, and you can be a bleep hole if you want, and, like, it just kind of shows your own ass, you know? So, like, I think we should be beyond that kind of BS in 2024. I see where you're coming from.
The BS isn't the good versus evil angle, is it?
It's not that it's just good versus evil. It's because it's like, I mean, you know, my friend group chat, right, yesterday, it's like, you know, we're joking, like, oh, it's the race wars between LSU and Iowa. And, like, that's what you do in as a joke as a group chat, because, like, that's what it is. But, like, when you're casting something, and we know that, yeah, like, it's Kim Mulkey, but it's also the way that the women from LSU's team have been and continue to be demonized, in large part, in my opinion, because they are mostly black. Like, I think that's where you need to really sit and start thinking about what it is that you're writing before you publish something like that in the Los Angeles Times. And so that's where I think that, you know, it's like, in some ways, and it's not quite this, but, like, how everybody's talking about the DEI mayor of Baltimore. Like, okay, what does DEI mean to you, right? Yeah, like, that just means that he's black, and, you know,
it's just a way to use a word that starts with a different letter, Miles.
Yes, exactly. I know. And so, like, that's, you know, people have sometimes said that about me, right? In my job at NBC Sports and Pro Football Talk. And I take great issue with it. So, like, all of that is part of why I feel the way I feel about that column.
It's why the RJ hired you, Miles, for sure.
If I said, it's
only reason to get the job.
So there wouldn't have been an issue with the good versus evil, because I believe it would have been a storyline in what I think was going to be the best game, that South Carolina is good and LSU is evil.
I don't know.
Well, here's the
and by the way, these are all, I know this sounds like, hey, this is infantile, we should be past this. I will bring it up forever. UNLV and Duke of the late 80s and 90s, that was a good versus evil. And I always believed that Duke was the evil. But there are a lot of people who went with the evil was UNLV. And I don't think that's the case. To me, Jerry Tarkanian was a likable guy and nice to people. On the other side, I don't know that Coach K is a great guy. I think in terms of cheating, he did everything and more than some of the other coaches who have been branded as evil. And there's something with the Duke culture And I'll use the term again. There's an iteration every 5 years or so of Christian Laettner with some guy on the team who is tripping people. You know, you can go to Filipowski, back to freaking, what's his name, the thug in the NBA, Grayson Allen, all the way back.
Grayson Allen.
Like, it's part of their culture.
Yeah, it is.
It is. Here's my issue with what you're saying, because I agree with you on the surface. If in a vacuum, I would agree with you.
Yeah.
It's not a vacuum. And we also understand this is not a vacuum. Everything has context. And I will say, I follow a lot of very racist, very out there people on social media intentionally.
Okay.
I want to know like what's going on, what the conversations are, what those things are.
Right.
And there was a lot of people passing around the, you know, LSU in their locker room rapping and Iowa in their locker room singing Taylor Swift. I think we know who the good guys are. Like, okay. That's the context of this.
Yeah. Yes.
Of it is framed that way in society and on social media and all these places. So that's why it is a problem when you then feed into it. And I also, like, I don't want to speak for a writer, and it's also third or fourth hand information. So I don't necessarily, I'll just say from what I heard, it wasn't the LA Times making him apologize. That it's one of those things, and I think Miles has probably been there too. I've been there where I've written something and said, I don't like how I wrote that. And that he almost immediately was like, that sucked. I should not have done that. I don't like the way that came out. And again, this is fourth hand, so I'm not saying this is for sure, but that is how I heard it transpired. And so I think that there's part of that as well. But what you're saying is true if nothing else exists. That's not the world we live in.
It's not. And you know, I think, Adam, a lot of – one of the good things about being a writer, you know, in sports is that a lot of times – you get to move on to the next thing and you can say, oh man, you know, I don't think that came off right, you know, and nobody will react to it because it just is what it is. But sometimes you do something and then it comes off wrong and you realize it came off wrong and then it gets blown up. And so, I've been there. I'm sure you've been there, Adam. Like anybody who writes, like one of the best parts is, you know, you get to try again tomorrow if you didn't do something exactly the way that you thought that you should have done it. You know, like, all right, you know what? We'll just move on from it. But sometimes you can't because it becomes something much bigger. And that's really, you know, if according to what you're saying here, that's what happened here. And I think if we can all, you know, take that step back and then say, look, I bleeped up. And this is not what I was trying to do, then, like, that's also commendable, you know, that you admit you made a mistake.
And it seemed very heartfelt. I'll just real quick do, like, a deep dive on that and what you're saying. We have, like, you know, we have analytics in this world now in terms of who's reading stories, things like that. When I have a story that posts and then immediately blows up, I start freaking out.
Oh. Yeah.
I'm like, why is everybody reading this? Is everybody passing this around because I did something wrong? And then you start reading it back and making sure. Like, those things do happen. And it happens fairly regularly. So, I mean, that is part of the journalism culture that we live in as well.
I do the same thing if a post starts blowing up on PFT. We notice if, like, I post it and, like, you know, say, like, I don't know, people start replying to it. I'm like, oh, crap, did I get the picture wrong? Did I get, did I mess up the headline? Like, what did I do? So, I do that all the time.
I will say, though, there is a danger in all of that, and I think it's especially dangerous for female sports to get offended. I see females get offended a lot, and a lot of it's based around the fact that they're getting coverage that men get, and that can be very negative sometimes. I saw a tweet last night where someone tweeted out, I say this in the most flattering way possible. Wait, why are we doing a qualifier here? Caitlin Clark has the, quote, rip your heart out of your chest competitiveness that MJ and Kobe had. What was that person worried about? Like comparing her to a male, that you're calling her just this vicious beast that rips your heart out. I'm like, just say it. We're going to be afraid. Now, every time we cover women's sports, and we've been doing it. I mean, we've been talking Caitlin Clark and LSU and Bulky forever. But every time we do it, now we have to be like dance around it. Like, be careful. Don't misunderstand what I'm saying.
Well, I hope not.
Hopefully he meant it to not offend Kobe fans. That's what I would hope.
I don't know.
Yeah.
That's what I would hope.
You want to offend Kobe and MJ fans.
I bet he's worried about fans of Caitlin Clark getting all fired up and taking it the wrong way somehow.
They should be doing jumping jacks if they got such a ridiculous comparison.
That she's being compared to those, those types of athletes. Okay. Yes. All right.
Well, I mean, listen, 12.3 million people watched that thing last night. I just saw that on social media. So that's a huge number.
Were you one?
For anything. What's that?
Were you one?
Absolutely. Yeah, I was one.
There you go.
Oh, you watched? Yeah. Adam, you said you watched at a party?
Yeah.
A little party? I was at a sports book with a big open area to view, and it was probably 70% full. And we're talking 3:45, 4 o'clock Pacific. So it was a good crowd.
Yeah, it was an early start. It was. I didn't love that, but,
but
cut off my gym time.
I could hear like the bartenders and some patrons there were like they were a little more knowledgeable on women's basketball and the Caitlin Clark and Mulkey stories than I would expect. So that's good.
Huh.
It's making big time inroads.
Yeah.
It is. It's tracking.
Miles Simmons with us. Okay. From Pro Football Talk. I haven't seen the results yet. I don't know if there's any early tracking. I think the vote around the Kansas City Chiefs, the money for their stadium, is one of the most important. There's super important voting coming up later in the year. But I think it's just really important. I think it would be wonderful for an area to say, you know what? Not this time, billionaire. You got to pony up.
I think it would be interesting. Here's my issue, I guess, with what the Chiefs are trying to do. They're trying to do a half measure, right? That stadium was built in the early 70s, and, you know, it's time for it to be replaced, all right? I mean, like, you know, you've got other stadiums that are much, much younger in their life cycles that are being replaced. For instance, you know, the Tennessee, I don't even remember what they call it, Nissan Stadium. I wanted to call it the Adelphia Coliseum. Like, I would hit the Wayback Machine right there. But they are already replacing that thing. That thing opened in 1999. The Cleveland Browns are trying to replace their stadium. Whatever they call the stadium in Buffalo, they're replacing that. That also is about
new
the
era
same
field,
life
Miles.
Cycle. Thank you, New Era. I want to, like, Ralph Wilson was the thing that came to mind, but like I'm sure that's not what it is called anymore. I don't know what's going on with my mind today. But the thing about Kansas City, like, if you're trying to do an extensive renovation of a building that was built in the 70s, eventually you're still going to need to replace that thing. And I think that they would be better off if they took the approach that the Colts did in the late 90s, early 2000s, and say, you know, all right, well, we've got this quarterback who is generational. Let's just make the house that Pat built, you know, and do it that way. So it's interesting because it's not just about the Chiefs, this vote that's going on in Missouri. It's also about the Royals. And so they want to have – the Royals want to have a stadium downtown. And then once they would move, then the Chiefs, you know, they would have all of that complex to themselves and they would build out of it and, you know, do like a park kind of thing, which I just – I don't know. It's a half measure to me. I think they need to be doing something more than that. And I think that would make it a easier vote if you were going to build something on that land for Kansas City that could be used more than, let's say, like, you know, 10 to 15 times a year, right? Because you're going to have a couple of concerts in the summer, and then otherwise it's just Chiefs football, and that's kind of, you know, what they say here, it's a white elephant. So it's the approach that the Browns are trying to take, where they're trying to build a new stadium in right next to the Cleveland airport, right? And otherwise, you know, you got councilmen in Cleveland being like, oh, well, you know, you got to do things this way and it has to be approved by the city. Otherwise, you know, you can't do it. And like, it's just kind of grandstanding. But you don't, if you have a dome in a cold weather city, you can use it more often. It's again, it's the approach Nashville's taken by building their stadium as a dome. So I think that's where stadiums are going now, especially that are going to be used as NFL facilities. So that to me is why this vote's very, very interesting. Yes. Like, are they going to tell the billionaires to shove it or not? Or are you going to say, okay, we'll pony up for this because it's not just one, but it's two stadiums. And we feel like this really does benefit the community here. But they're not, the Chiefs are going to go anywhere. They would just probably go into Kansas and then be like, and more people would get that right, where they're like, oh, enjoy Kansas when you're going to Kansas City. Because, like, yeah, you're really Kansas City, like the city parts of Missouri. And then there's also a Kansas City, Kansas, and that just makes it more confusing.
This other big story, and it will get bigger around the Chiefs, is Rashee Rice. And I didn't realize this, that the alleged drag racing that was going on in Dallas that caused a 6-car accident, he owns one of the cars and he leased the other. He's
yes.
tied to both cars.
That is our current understanding.
Wow.
Yes, at PFT, that both of those cars he was responsible for.
Massive story that we can reference it here because we had the ultimate disaster with an NFL player on the Raiders, yes. You know, turning out to kill a woman and her dog, drag racing. And in Kansas City, we're fresh off of finding out that Britt Reed, Andy Reid's son, is already out of jail. So they already had that incident in their past. Mm-hmm. And now this. I wonder what's going to happen and what the NFL will do since Roger Goodell is so often judge, jury, and executioner.
The NFL should come down pretty hard on this. I mean, you know, and these things are still allegations. They're still investigating and all that. But, I mean, he needs a serious suspension. In large part because of what happened in Las Vegas, you know, with Henry Ruggs. I don't understand why it is that players insist on doing this kind of stuff that's so reckless and so dangerous. You know, it just it makes no sense to me. And like, I understand that, you know, people are young and, you know, they're kind of dumb. And, you know, you got this fast car and you won a Super Bowl and fast cars, right? And you won a Super Bowl and you're kind of trying to have fun with your friends. But like, that's not the way to do it. You don't endanger the lives of other people, especially when you play for an organization that had the Britt Reid incident happen, right? I mean, we're really lucky that no one else got more seriously hurt when you're doing something this reckless and stupid. So, yeah, I think that the NFL should come down really hard on Rashi Rice with this, because it's not an acceptable thing to do. And, you know, this more so than the sports betting. Like, yeah, I realize that there's an integrity of the game issue with that. But when you're endangering people's lives, like, that to me is a bigger deal.
How bad of a position does the NFL put themselves in if the authorities can't prove anything? Not that we don't know yet how that's going to play out. But if they end up saying, hey, we can't prove that he was driving, we don't know what the circumstances were, nothing we can do here, and then the NFL's like, oh, yeah, we're suspending him for, whatever, 8 games or whatever they do, like, that does put them in a tough position.
Does it, though? I mean, the NFL's done that before, and you could say the same thing, and this is not the same thing, and I hate to, you know, equate crimes, but like with Deshaun Watson, I mean, we don't know what was in those civil settlements. We know he settled a bunch of lawsuits, but it's not like, you know, the NFL was reacting to something that was criminal. All the criminal charges were dismissed and dropped, so the NFL still suspended him for as long as they did, right? It ended up being 11 games, but I mean, this is something that happens all the time where, yeah, you may not have criminal liability, but that doesn't mean the NFL is not going to act. And I don't think that that's a big problem. I mean, regardless, you know, if you're responsible for the cars, then you're involved in this.
Miles Simmons with us, Pro Football Talk. Got to get your take on one last NFL draft issue. I know we're getting close, though.
We're in April.
We can open the floodgates on the draft soon. I have heard a few athletes that I actually respect say that Kayla Williams, because of the pink phone and the nails, could have some locker room issues in terms of leadership. Can we buy this at all?
I don't know. I do think it's interesting. Okay. He's not the typical quarterback. And one of my good friends covers USC for the LA Times. And what he has described Caleb Williams as is the first Gen Z quarterback.
Yes.
You know, because everybody else who's kind of entered the league has been typical. Like, you didn't see any of this from CJ Stroud, right? Or Bryce Young. You know, like, these guys, they came in the league and they were just what we're used to seeing as typical quarterbacks despite their age. But Caleb Williams is a little bit different, and Caleb Williams realizes that he's great and that he has a certain power in that greatness, and he wants to be unabashedly himself. I think that there's something pretty admirable in that, but I also do think, you know, when you're going into a locker room and you've got 30, 32-year-old veterans who have been around the league and have done things one way, you better be damn good. Otherwise, it's going to be a little bit tougher for people to follow you, right? And, you know, I don't say that to put Caleb Williams down. I think that that's kind of the attitude of athletes and, you know, that people that I've covered. It's like, you, and that's almost the same thing for any rookie, but especially one, if you're going to be coming in there, you got hype, you got this, you got that, you got to come in and you've got to still earn the respect of your teammates. And so I think whether he's got a pink phone case or nail polish or not, like, that's going to be the case anyway. With some people, is that going to be maybe a little bit more difficult because of the way Caleb Williams sometimes chooses to express himself? Yeah, I think that that's just a societal thing. That's not just a locker room thing. But I don't think that that by any means is indicative that he's going to be a crappy quarterback. I don't think so. I think, you know, and we can assume that he's going to go to Chicago, right? You know, that's if that locker room is going to embrace him because he goes on the field and he performs, he comes in, you know, for when the offseason program's already started, and he comes in and he starts, you know, showing a level of understanding of what the offense is pretty early on, then people are going to believe in him. You know, it doesn't matter what he wears or what his phone case is. It's going to be, can you demonstrate your ability to go out and be an effective quarterback? And as long as he does that, I think he'll be fine.
There are people in the league, Miles, who believe that Caleb Williams is just trying to do an indirect Eli, of trying to throw enough doubt into him with some of these things that sure. Chicago passes on him. I find that silly. Where are you on this conspiracy theory?
I also find it silly because, you know, one of the things that really stood out to me listening to him at his combine press conference was he said, I want to go number one overall. And I think that that's his goal. And it just so happens that Chicago has the number one overall pick. And I don't think it would matter if, you know, it were Chicago, if it were Carolina, if it were anybody else. He wants to be the number one overall pick.
Well, I think the goal is to get Chicago to trade the pick, I would imagine.
Yeah, but they're not going to do that. If I'm Chicago, I'm not doing that. So, you know, that's cute.
What if they don't like his phone case?
So what's that?
What if they don't like his phone case?
Well, if they don't like his phone case, they can get him a Chicago Bears when he enters the building.
Then they might trade the pick.
I don't think so.
Telling you, man, there's a lot of push on ESPN's TV morning show. Three different guys are saying Jaden Daniels is the guy, that he's their QB1.
I don't think so.
You've been programmed, my friend. There are differing opinions.
Maybe. I mean, like, that's fine to think that, but, you know, when I look at Caleb Williams, I see special talent, and I see great talent in Jaden Daniels, but I think that there's something a little bit more clear cut about Caleb Williams than there is with these other guys, at least from what I've watched.
Miles, we appreciate it. You have a wonderful week. Thank you so much.
All right, guys. You too. See ya.
Pro Football Talk. ProFootballTalk.com. Florio's doing a good job of he's made the foray into updating betting odds a bunch. So every once in a while, there's a good story up there. There's a lot of good stories up there. But now I'm seeing more and more gambling content. So that's good stuff. Speaking of the net.
I was going to say real quick, absentee ballots have been counted in Kansas City.
What is it?
After all absentee ballots have been counted.
It's going to be on the side of no.
56% no.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see what really happens.
Yeah.
But you're right. Then the setup is if Missouri voters are like, nope, no more corporate welfare. And then Kansas will step up and be like, yeah, we'll do it. Also interesting in the Chiefs vote here that Frank White, the former Royals player, is one of the vocal voices against. It's fascinating, right? I'm not saying all athletes fall in line and are all pro, you know, money for athletics, but he's been pretty strong on it. I saw a story recently where he's like, you should vote no, and we're going to try to make the Royals and the Chiefs pay for this election. They need to put up about $1 million to cover a lot of this. Not always a popular stance, right? Going against the big teams in the market. The Royals aren't the big team, but the Chiefs are.
But they should.
One more thing on the nails of Caleb Williams on the phone. You saw that a Duke player, Jared McCain, signed an NIL deal with Sally Hansen. I would never know what Sally Hansen was, except that this is kind of the world of the SO, my significant other. And I was like, oh, I know that name. So, yeah, he signed a deal with beauty and nail polish brand Sally Hansen.
Good.
Good.
Get rich.
Would you do your nails for a significant amount of money?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
I was actually talking last night about NIL for pedicures. Feet are disgusting, And male feet are even more disgusting.
Sure.
And you but are
athlete feet are.
Oh God. Athlete's feet. I don't even want to get into this.
Yeah.
Some of the pictures we've seen.
Yeah.
More males are wearing flip flops now. I blame Belichick for the jeans and flip flop look.
Sure.
And I pointed often to the fact that, like a Belichick, you can't have the talons. You know, just the nails are just horrendous. What if the could we get the station? Would you do it if the station group was like pedicure?
Oh, here's
live reads.
Here's $4,000.
Live reads. Sure. Adam Hill pedicure. This is where I go get my pedicures and my manis if I need them.
First of all, I have, but I'm saying if you paid me to do it, yeah.
Well, we're seeing reaction from lots of guys with Caleb Williams, and I'm sure with Jared McCain, like, it's going to be a problem in the locker room, leadership issues.
No. It's not. It's totally fine.
Okay, there you go.
Everybody will be okay.
Everyone will be okay.
I think a lot of players in the Raiders locker room do.
Yeah, I would, if you want to be a tough guy and talk about someone's pedicure being an issue, go walk around the UFC.
Yeah.
Because back in the day, the first time I saw it with high-level athletes, it might have been Chuck Liddell. So go tell Chuck.
Well, I also think it might be.
There's an issue.
There might be some sort of requirement in terms of the
safety.
Deal. Yeah, for sure. You kick somebody in the face, you got to trim up the nails.
Oh, if you're going to eye poke as much as Chris Weidman over the weekend, you better have smooth nails at least. You don't want to freaking slight.
Horribly botched.
That was unbelievable.
That was.
We almost never have a little text chain going about USC, and I just happened to be watching, and I was like, wait, why is he celebrating?
Yeah.
Wait, he won?
Yeah.
That wasn't a DQ? Poking the dude in the eye multiple times? The guy was, who was that guy? His opponent. Silva. But
yeah, it was.
Crying, like was begging Weidman, like, you got to tell him. Like, this is ridiculous. Please.
And Weidman says, well, don't, when you get poked in the eye, don't go down.
Oh, that's it's his fault.
Yeah. He's like, shouldn't have gone down.
Keep fighting on. Yeah. Like, I'm blinded.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
2.5 hours in. No men's college basketball. We'll get to it now. By the way, transfer portal. It's one of my favorite things to read through each day. I always carve out a couple minutes. See who's in. Who's jumped in. You saw Pop Isaacs went in.
Oh, yeah.
Vegas guy, Texas Tech. We love the big fellas. Especially those who are a little beefy. Eddie Lampkin, Colorado. Going to Syracuse. Okay. I don't want to cast aspersions on decisions, but I do wonder what he got from Syracuse. Everyone's getting something now. Syracuse did have a good bounce back season with Boeheim gone. So they've got a budget. They always had a budget. And as I pointed out, you remember Boeheim complaining about Miami? Like, they bought their entire roster.
Yeah.
Just like you did in the 80s and 90s. And got in trouble for it multiple times, by the way. And I pointed out at the time when he was complaining about Miami, what he was really complaining about was the spigot being turned off or very much reduced. The flow was reduced on the money he was getting from people around Syracuse. Because the money people only give you money to a certain point, and then they're finally like, you know what? You're not winning. What are we paying for? So Syracuse back to having pretty good support, and they get a solid center, 10-7 guy in Eddie Lampkin.
I'm having a very conflicted day in the transfer portal.
Why? What happened?
Well, it looks like Danny Wolf is going to go to Michigan.
Ooh, so Danny Wolf is?
Danny Wolf is a NBA prospect, a seven-footer at Yale, who can move and pass and shoot.
You're a big Yale fan.
Needs to get much stronger.
Right.
But there's a lot of there's a lot of scouts at Yale games this year because of Danny Wolf, and looks like he is going to be the first big pickup.
Much better Big Ten destinations to go to.
That's not true. Looks like he's going to go to Michigan with Dusty May, who also it looks like is getting Vlad Goldin.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's right. He went in the portal, so a seven-footer there.
Which means he's going to bring Vlad Goldin to Michigan. So they have two pretty good 7-footers. Now, Danny Wolf can play outside. Golden can play inside.
Right.
But and Wolf is a really, really good passer, so that I think they might work well together. But good start.
Is there going to be a little trend here that some of the highest paid dudes in the transfer portal are going to be bigs because of what's happening in the tournament and what is in the Final Four? Maybe. I thought we were going towards one in, four out, much more wide open basketball. And right now, I don't think all of college basketball is changing your style. I'll let you answer the question. So go ahead.
No, I think you can do one in, four out with a really, really good big. I think that's what Purdue's doing. They basically just have four shooters around one big guy.
They don't really play and I always thought that was kind of a problem, that it was an approach that Matt Painter was married to, that he had to have a 7-footer and then a 6'9", 250 guy at the four. Like, you don't need both.
Yeah, now they've got basically a 7-footer or 7'4" guy with four shooters.
God, he loves size. He's got a seven. I was looking up. There was another kid on the bench the other day, and I'm like, is he bigger than Edie?
Yeah, they brought him in. I was like, and oh, okay.
He's 7'2". He's 7'2", 255, a freshman. Yeah.
He's definitely beefier.
See, I don't want to go overboard. This is going to be a big discussion at the Final Four about the resurrection, the rise of the big man. But I think I think Edie has turned himself into a generational big man from effectiveness. I mean, we're talking about a guy who's going 30 and 15 on the reg now in the postseason. He had 40 the other night. Your first question on all of this, though, is we want to see Edie against UConn.
Yeah.
I do.
Well, I mean, there's multiple reasons that I do, but...
You have national championship bets?
No, in every bracket I did, pretty much, I have Connecticut beating Purdue, which I know is fairly common, but it turned out not that many people did it because nobody wants to go with that.
I didn't pick UConn to make the Final Four, but I picked Purdue. I don't think I had him winning the championship. I think I had him falling short.
I'll be in the money of every pool I'm in if Connecticut beats Purdue in the championship, which obviously is the most likely.
Easy.
That's fine.
Nobody else did it. Moron.
And also, Houston was a more popular pick than Purdue.
I picked Houston,
and they were one seed. So, I'll cash in a lot if that's the championship game, and I feel like it will be.
Edie against UConn will also feature a 7'2", 255er in Donovan Clingan on the other side, which will then get fascinating, because I saw one of the guys from the New York Post, the Big East heavy paper, who said, just imagine Dan Hurley's reaction to Zach Edey getting these calls against UConn. He's gotten these calls all year long, brother. He's gotten them for years.
If you're saying
watch some basketball out of your area. It's been one of the issues we've been talking about. I will say it. I'm one of the first, if not the first, to bring it up. I started talking about it last year, and then we carried it over to Jaden Ledee. When you got big men who are averaging 1.9 to 2.3 fouls a game, and all they play is a physical style, and they're in the lane, that is incredible. They're being officiated differently. By the way, no one is really paying attention to Clingan. They're paying attention to him right now because he's dominating. He only averages 1.9 fouls a game, but he plays 22 minutes a night as opposed to upper 28, 29, 30.
And also the issue, it is very tough, and I rip on officials all the time. It's tough to officiate Edie.
It is.
I think – I've watched games in this tournament where Zach Edey probably got fouled 70 times. And I'm not exaggerating on that. He gets fouled 4 times in possession. Are you going to do that? You're going to call everyone?
They call a lot of them.
Sure, but are you going to call everyone? Like, you know how long the game's going to take and people are going to start getting mad? He's going to shoot 80 free throws?
So
is that going to be entertaining for people?
Is the message in this Final Four is, fellas, have at it. Beat the F out of each other.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's
because you got bigs on all teams. Now, Grant Nelson isn't like a traditional power big, but he's good. I'm excited about that matchup because I do think it's going to require Edie to sort of balance where he is on the floor. Not that Nelson's like freaking Dirk Nowitzki or something. He's not a 50% 3-point shooter, but he is going to drag him out into deep water.
I also feel like they'll have somebody else step out with him, and then Edie will just wait in the paint for him. I don't think they're gonna have Zach Edey chase him around the perimeter.
The bigs in the Final Four: DJ Burns, listed at 6'9", 260, mm-hmm. Over 300. Clingan, Edey, Nelson. Bama's got other bigs. I saw a couple things. One, on the college game, I don't know how much you watch the Hedgehog, Stan Van Gundy. He was
great.
Out of his mind about how physical college basketball is.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do we talk about? What do we talk about in the Mountain West Conference? It is a rock fight.
Yeah.
It is big man basketball, throw to the post, beat the snot out of each other. And now Van Gundy, who's used to the NBA, is like, wait, I'm not. And by the way, I'm not digging on the NBA because the NBA, this is funny. So the NBA supposedly went to FIBA ball, which is more skill with the bigs, more perimeter play. And now people are mad because the NBA is more free-flowing and open, but it's soft. College basketball is brawl ball. I heard Mark Few last week on Colin, and Mark Few made a comment about what FIBA ball is now. And he was saying FIBA ball is now brawl ball. This is crazy. We're just trading styles around the world.
Lots of shifts. I will say, you know, my dad doesn't know much about sports and doesn't watch.
Turn on something. We got something here.
No, I'll say he probably watches a full game like once every 5 years if he happens to be here.
Yeah.
And he was sitting down watching the games, like, man, they are just going after each other. I'm like, yeah, that's what they do. And he also said the refs don't really seem to call what they used to call. And I said, you can't.
I can't, yeah.
You can't do it.
Everyone's
out. You can't call fouls every possession.
It's funny. We were having a conversation today. I was out at UNLV football practice, and we're going to have a quick conversation that we got today with Brendan Marion, the OC for the Rebels. And Mike Romalo covers both football and basketball. Much bigger basketball fan. We were talking about – actually, what did he made a comment about something about – the third San Diego State UNLV meeting – being one of the most physical games he's ever seen. And then I responded with, I think the second game here was unbelievable because and this is not to brag, I don't think you get the physicality. And if you're down on the floor, just the running down the floor and bigs setting position against each other, the first clash, like Jaden Ledee and Rob Whaley, the first clash is like O-line, D-line. I'm telling you, it would be, you know, this is not just unique to that matchup, but like Whaley sets himself at 265 and it's like, boom, right into, like, you have to like freaking lock
like
down.
It's like the first strike in a sumo match.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Just a slamming against each other. And then I think at one point, basketball was so mad about how physical the NBA got with the Knicks and the Heat and the Pistons. It just that they were like, okay. We're going to clean it up. We're going to start calling those fouls. They don't call any of those now.
No.
Like, rare. Like I actually get pissed when they call battling for position fouls. Like, you can't do that anymore.
Well, you also can't just attack guys that are trying to get position either. Like,
right.
You do have to call it on occasion. But I will say,
some hooking involved.
If he thought that game was the most physical he'd ever seen, like, imagine if Caleb Boone played. He wasn't even in there. It's a different game.
So I'm looking. I favor four out, one in. And like you said, a lot of the way Edie, the way they set it up is, hey, throw it into them. If they're going to double and triple, then someone's going to be open corner, wing, top to take a three.
Sorry, I just got a text that could be relevant to us, but I don't know where it's coming from. So.
Okay, we'll take a break. We'll follow up on your text, and we're going to hear from the guy who runs the UNLV football offense. A lot of exciting things to talk about, including a newcomer at the last minute who's already making waves with the Rebels.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
364-1100, 364-1100. We've got LPGA coming to town. They're going to be over at Shadow Creek. Which is, we've been out there, right? You remember it, Adam.
Sure.
LPGA T-Mobile match play, April 3rd. So we're right here to the 7th, Shadow Creek, 96 of the best LPGA pro golfers in town. They're going to have an NFL scramble with Derek Carr, Devontae Adams, Keenan Allen, Von Miller. You can get your tickets at AXS.com. Shadow Creek is awesome. Just to go out to the course and walk it is neat. And then you got these high-level golfers out there. We've got a pair of passes right now that Ari will hook you up with. Caller 7-364-1100, 364-1100. Another cool event going on this weekend is the UNLV Football Spring Showcase. We'll give you more details on that. 1 o'clock at Allegiant. We got a lot of good conversations to go through the rest of the week pertaining to UNLV football. So, offensive coordinator Brendan Marion talked to a couple of us in the media. And in this portion of the convo that we clipped up, He just talks about how the spring has been with lots of new players around and what they're trying to achieve.
I just love our guys' intelligence from the standpoint of all the information they've been able to retain. We've been trying to drown them, you know, give them as much information as possible to work on through the finish of the spring and the summer. So it's been a heavy install, and the guys have been done a good job of trying to execute the plan and the new stuff that we've given to them.
Why did you feel like you needed new stuff? Or is that kind of a yearly thing?
For me, I mean, we're always trying to figure out how do we lift up the trophy. Obviously, what we did last year wasn't enough to lift up the trophy. So we needed to add more things, and then we had to, you know, adapt our system now to who our new quarterbacks are that are in the room, and, you know, new pieces that we've added in the running back room, skill set, O-line. We're always going to adapt to the players that we have. So we had to, you know, add those things to, you know, highlight their abilities.
I've had multiple players say, other players on the offense, that Haj Malik, one on the field, is a super, super leader, like maybe the best they've played with. And also that off the field, he's been really cerebral and he's helping guys. So is that what you expected when you brought him in?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, anytime you look at a kid's track record, we want to look at his past successes. You know, he was a captain where he was at. And, you know, those same things that made us recruit him, you know, we want kids to operate in their strengths. And, you know, that's one of the reasons that he came here, was because of his leadership ability and how he was able to, you know, lead his prior team. And he's obviously brought that intangible here with him.
What was the connection to find a guy at Campbell?
So there's a guy who's, you know, trained Ricky White and a couple guys in Atlanta who helped us get Jet. He worked with Jordan Addison a little bit, and that was really the connection that got me connected to Hodge. And, you know, Steph has done a great job with those guys in the Atlanta area. You know, some big time talents, and, you know, I know his credit score is good. When he calls me, I trust him. So I know that if he tells me a guy can really play, he knows what I'm looking for.
There you go. Long conversation today, kind of a mini presser. Mike Romalo was in that as well. He asked the first question there of OC Brennan Marion. They'll be featured this weekend, the Rebels, on both sides of the ball at Allegiant. So a chance to get into Allegiant for free and watch the spring showcase. Last year was very entertaining. You could see it was a coming out party for Maiava, who made some mistakes but made some great plays as well. And it was also a day when Jacob DeJesus got like 20 targets and looked fantastic.
Sign of things to come.
We talked about Haj Malik Williams, the first transfer quarterback in. Matthew Sluka will be in officially, I think, right at the beginning of June. I'll post more of the conversation up on my Twitter account. And I had talked about, you know, hey, Haj Malik having a head start on Matt Sluka. The other thing we mentioned, and by the way, I want to point out, the message has been clear from almost everyone we talked to, that last year, 9 wins, not good enough. It's been the you can tell that's been the message.
Yeah,
the end of the year wasn't up to par, and the close, the not winning the bowl game, not sufficient. Like, okay, yeah, because a lot of people around UNLV football are like, great year, but that's been the message. Got to get better.
Next year, 10 wins, conference championship, and
we'll see.
Barry Odom stays on the bowl for 8 seconds.
Very okay. Those are goals. Yeah, very tough schedule coming out of the gates. I will mention, there was a new player. I don't know exactly when he popped up because I saw him Saturday, and he was out there today. New number. Like, who is that? Number 2, playing wide receiver. Their top recruit from the Galveston area, true freshman. This kid named Damian McDaniel. He just won a high school basketball championship, plays basketball as well, and he's here. So he's sort of a mid-spring arrival, and he is already running with the ones and twos, which may have, and not to speculate, but, you know, Zio Griffin, one of the two-line, three-line receivers who's been here for a while, went into the portal. And maybe that, maybe he looked at it, was like, whoa, okay. True freshman, already in.
It's pretty tall.
So it goes to the statement that Barry Odom's made the entire time. We tell high school recruits, you might play your first year, man. The whole class thing, like, whoever's the best, they're going to play. We saw it last year. Right, Jet Thomas went out and scored 12 touchdowns. Austin Boyd was eventually a starter, got a lot of time on the offensive line.